You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Rob.
Think of it. An all-shaman expansion to World of Warcraft.
And Daryl.
We'll call it ShamWow. The thing, it sells itself.
Greetings and welcome to episode 172 of The Training Dummies. Recorded on August 1st, 2017, my name is Daryl, and I think I take too much vacation because I'm going on vacation here in 2 days, and it feels like I just got back, so that's my rough life currently. Rob, what have you been up to? What have I been away?
I've ever heard anybody ever say that in my life.
It just feels like this summer has just been, I'm never home, which is, I guess, all right.
But what about you? I'm excited about this episode because I've actually been playing, if you didn't guess by our clip at the beginning, it's a special shaman episode. So I've been playing a lot of shaman lately. The shaman class mount is one of my favorites. So I'm ready to do this.
And I just got mine on Sunday in anticipation of this episode. So let's introduce our guest. Coming from Blizzard Watch and my favorite podcast, the Lore Watch podcast, we have Joe Perez. Hello, sir.
Well, hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really happy to be here.
We're happy to have you.
Sounds like everyone else is happy for you to be here.
Well, I'm really happy that everybody else is happy that I'm here.
Dude, it's so awesome. I'm glad we've been able to kind of poach your camp a little bit to do these to do the stay classy episodes. But I like Daryl said, I've been listening to you for years, so it's really cool to have you here as a guest tonight.
Well, I want to thank you. Whenever you're listening, I want to thank you for not only listening to my endless prattle on those other shows, but also thanks for having me here and being a part of this.
So I believe that unlike some of your other shows, you won't be fighting for the mic, because I know a couple of your other guests there. And I will use that as a segue. In case people don't know, maybe you can give us a little bit of your background, what you do in game with Blizzard, with the other franchise.
Okay, so I'm an old WoW man when it comes to Blizzard stuff. I've been around for a very long time. And I started on, randomly enough, writing for the site that will no longer be named, and then what eventually moved into Blizzard Watch. I do the shaman content there whenever there's shaman content to post. And I also do the Lore Watch podcast with my two absolutely wonderful co-hosts who have very valid things to say all the time.
Well, I'm not arguing that.
No, me neither.
This is where we normally do bonus questions, and I do have a bonus question.
Okay, there you go.
Bonus round, okay.
The bonus question is actually for Daryl.
For me?
Surprise, yeah, Daryl.
Uh-oh.
How do you feel coming into an episode like this, having completely abandoned your shaman to go and play a warlock? Do you have any regret for that? Do you feel like now that you've seen some of the campaign and you have the mount and everything, are you rethinking some of that?
No. Shamans were always my first love. I started a shaman on release day. That is the same character that I started on release day is the one that I just got my class mount on 2 days ago. It was my main for probably 10 years, but seeing what Chaos Bolts do, I just can't go back. I can't do it. I love my warlock now.
lava bursts are pretty good for that.
Those are all right.
I'll give you a little cred for having those years of like under your belt, but I'm a little wounded that you abandoned me for warlocks. A little bit.
Yeah. It actually was Miss. Blame Miss. That's what did it. It was early Sunday morning. I did a 5-man with another guildie, and it was Mogoshan, was it Palace, I believe? Mm-hmm. And there was a destruction warlock in there, and the amount of damage he was doing was absolutely insane, and he had zero raid gear. And I was just, wow, I need to try that. And that's just kind of where it went from there. And then I over-recruited healers for the raid team, and then it's all of a sudden the other shaman healer I had was way better than I was, so it's like, well, I'm just going to go DPS, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for my Shaman days. But I do have it at 110. I did get it quite a bit of gear this weekend, and I do have the class mount, so I'm all caught up on the story. So I haven't completely abandoned it. It's just not my main anymore. So
well, yeah. Maybe after tonight, that'll swing back in the other
direction. Maybe.
This is Matthew Rossi from Blizzard Watch, and you're listening to the Training Dummies, Rob and Daryl.
If you guys have any questions or comments or want to find out what we're doing, we are active on Twitter. The show is at Training Dummies. I am at Rob Copeland, and Daryl is at I am not a shaman _ something or other. All right, Joe, what we want to do here tonight is take this just kind of from the beginning, because I think all the classes basically start out the same. You all kind of like get recruited by Khadgar, and you go down to the Broken Shore, and you do the whole thing, and the Alliance gets mad at Horde, and Horde takes off, and... So is there anything shaman specific about that, or where does it branch out from there?
Well, the shaman specific stuff really starts afterwards when, in the aftermath of everything that happens on the Broken Shore, you're sent to what is literally the heart of Azeroth. It is this ancient alcove that overlooks the maelstrom where Deathwing tore into the world, where all this catastrophic energies are coalescing. And it is your job to open up this place to keep balance. And you start to not just see the elements manifest, but they're stronger elements. These are super beefy elementals. This is a place that you take one step to the left and it's on fire, and one step to the right and there's water cascading, or there's the gusts of wind. It is this epic moment. And then as you go from what is... people just effectively refer to as a hole in the ground sometimes, to overlook what is just the raging waters of the maelstrom. And from there, it is your job to embark on your Order Hall quest, which is to become the Farseer, the top of the Earthen Ring, to bring it back from the brink of destruction after losing so many shaman. But not only do that, to do something no other person, no other hero in the history of Azeroth has been able to do: unite and coerce all of the elemental lords to the side of the defense of Azeroth. It is.
I'm already ready to freaking jump ship and go shopping now. Jeez.
And that's the thing, right? Like, all these classes, every class has these like epic moments, and they have these really intricate stories that tie into the world in different ways. You know, paladins and priests calling on the light or the void, and warriors punching dragons. Those are all great. I'm cool with you guys. You guys got some cool stuff. You don't have anything nearly as steeped in lore and legend as shaman do.
Mm-hmm.
Those elemental lords that you were recruiting, they were there during the Black Empire. They were there when Azeroth was still in one piece, when there was one continent, before the Old God infestation happened, and even after the Old God infestation happened. These are the most powerful beings that have walked this plane, aside from the Titans or Old Gods themselves, and you are bringing them to heal. Tell me another class that gets to do that. You can't.
I got nothing.
I know.
I'm like, well, priests do the thing. Well, no, because paladins bail out the priests and they go home crying. So,
and here's the other thing too. Now, I know a lot of the listeners who are even tangentially hip with the lore know that at least once we've killed an elemental lord. We've killed Ragnaros twice, but we've killed him. We've killed him on his home plane. He's gone. He's no longer there. Not only do you get to go and bring the elemental plane of fire back in, you get to become a kingmaker. You get to name another elemental lord. You get to basically place the ruler of that plane on his throne. And as a result of debt to you, he's like, yeah, okay, I'll help you out. I got you. And it's like, it's just this epic moment, because that was one of the things that I was worried about, is like, we killed Ragnaros. What's going to happen? Are we resurrecting him? What's going on? Nope. Yeah, you just find a new one. It's great.
So where does the story start then? So what's the first thing we do? Was it getting the artifact? I believe it was. Or was it opening the class hall first? I can't remember. I did this at the beginning, like the very beginning of the expansion.
Yeah, the first thing you do is get your artifacts. So you have to choose one of your three artifacts, whatever your specialty is. And those are pretty epic artifacts in and of themselves. You have the Fist of Ra'den, the Doomhammer, and the Scepter of Azjara, which, you know, it's those are epic in and of themselves and what they do. You go through and you go through your individual scenarios. And I will say that as much as everybody may love Thrall and the Doomhammer, the other two I think were infinitely better as far as what those stories go and how you unlock them.
Well, do you want to go through those now? And yeah, let's go through those stories and
we can start with the unlocking.
So I'll start with a couple of things here, and well, you guys can tell me to shut up if you want, but we'll start with the Fist of Ra'den. And here's the important thing, and this is the actual excerpt from the official site, which I think is absolutely cool. Amon-Thul, the High Father, leader of the Titan Pantheon, entrusted his greatest servant, High Keeper Ra, with this artifact, which could channel the fury of storms. Ra used it to bestow life on the Titan-forged Mogu race, and he wielded it in battle against the Black Empire for years beyond counting. Later lost to Ra, the weapon was ultimately recovered by the August Celestial Zuen, who saw its immense and dangerous power and chose to safeguard it until someone worthy could take up the weapon in a righteous cause once again. That description alone is only a couple sentences, but you know very epic things. First of all, this is a Titan relic. This is something gifted by the most powerful Titan of the Pantheon, given to his greatest servant that created and gave life to an entire race that we had an entire expansion about. And you get to go and get it. You get to go, and it's this epic chain where Rhaegar goes, hey, I heard a story of something, but we're going to have to go back to Pandaria, and we're going to have to go talk to some people. And you go with the greatest gladiator coach of all time, and you go into an arena fight to prove your worth to Zuen, to prove that you do not have any sort of tainted hatred inside of you. And it is one of my favorite laugh-out-loud moments of any quest I've done in this game, where the final encounter is you fighting Chen and Lili, because they're trying to get it themselves to help save and fight against the Legion, save Azeroth and fight against the Legion. And it's this moment where you're in the middle of battling with them in this arena setting when they start pulling all of their moves from Heroes of the Storm. And I just died laughing when I saw that.
I was expecting it to be to come across as a little more whimsical, like roll your eyes at it, like, oh great, here's Lili, you know. But it was freaking awesome.
And they're saying their lines from the game. The voice actors were on point. It was really, really well done. And of course, as is sort of the theme with everything else, you get everything done and sorted, and the Legion goes and says, hey, we're here. We got stuff to do, and you're kind of in our way. We want that artifact. Move. And so you have to fight against the Legion and sort of save everything from going on. And then after everything is said and done, when you take up the Fist of Ra'den and you raise it high in the air, and lightning just cracks down and lights up the entire room and expels the Legion, it is this epic moment where Zuen goes, okay, yeah, you're good. Go ahead. This is yours. Take it with you. And it was such a cool moment. First of all, because I really like the idea of going back to Pandaria and doing something shaman specific, because as much as I may have liked that expansion, there wasn't a whole lot of shamanism in there.
Right.
You know, it wasn't our expansion. So to have that little tidbit of like, oh yeah, this really important thing, this thing that was used to fight against the most powerful evil in the world, here it is. So like, I think that's just an absolutely phenomenal moment.
Yeah. That was one of my favorites. I like that one.
Now, I'll go to Doomhammer just because I want to save my favorite for last.
right.
Now, Doomhammer, this is an iconic weapon for the entirety of the Warcraft IP, and it's forged in elemental lava on the orc homeworld of Draenor. This massive hammer is connected deeply with the elements, and its true power is only awakened in the hands of those who can speak to the elements in kind. The Doomhammer was long wielded by Aughrim Doomhammer, one of the greatest orc warriors of the Horde, and now rests with Thrall, one of the most powerful shaman Azeroth has ever known. Love or hate Thrall, he is definitely a super powerful shaman, but the hook here, at least in the story, is he lost it. In the battle with everything that happened, he lost that hammer. And this is coming after the elements kind of ignoring him, go, okay, we're done with you. We don't want to deal with you anymore. So, like, Thrall's super emo at this point. And you have to go, not just anywhere, you have to go to the deep home, the elemental plane of Earth, through the maelstrom, to go get this back. And it's this cool moment, too, not for the Thrall stuff necessarily, but this introduces your character to interacting with the elemental lords in more of a equal way. No, they're not subordinate to you yet, but you're not exactly subordinate to them. And it introduces this nice dynamic where it's like you start getting these little glimmers of, wait a minute, wait a minute, she's showing me deference. Why? And you go through this whole chain to do all of these things to sort of clean up Deepholm a little bit, which anybody who played through Cataclysm, some of this stuff is going to be really familiar. And it's a nice little throwback to what I think is one of the coolest zones they've ever created. And then you get Doomhammer back, you break back out through into the, you know, to the heart of Azeroth, which is right there. And, you know, you claim your role and you know, Thrall goes, okay, well, I think my time with this is done. I got babies to take care of. And I think my wife is yelling for me and she's really scary. So I'm going to go over here. You keep that good. And you just kind of go and you do your thing.
I think maybe I could pop this in here real quick before we get on to the rest of one. What's your take then on Alliance getting Doomhammer as the enhancement weapon? Because it just feels like that's so Horde iconic, I guess.
Yes, but you have to also understand too that it's, in my personal opinion, I'm cool with it. And the reason I'm cool with it is because the Doomhammer is as important to Alliance history as it is to Horde history. It has been at all the iconic turning points that have affected the Alliance. It has been in the hands of somebody who has shaped that human world, the human empire, the Alliance, into what it is. And so for them to sort of have it is one of those moments where it's like, it feels more like fulfilling the prophecy almost than somebody on the Horde side getting it. Because the prophecy was always that Aughrim would lose the hammer and it would pass on to somebody else, another worthy successor. And who better to wield it than somebody who it has committed atrocities and wrongs against? Mm-hmm. It's like this ultimate karmic balance. And I really like that because balance, it is a very shamanistic thing. And it's just, I think it's perfectly poetic. And I think it's something that not a lot of people have talked about. They're like, oh, Alliance shouldn't have it. But no, it makes perfect sense. It actually makes more sense than it's staying on the Horde side.
I really like that point to say that it's not a Horde weapon. It's just an iconic weapon and balance is being restored.
It is an important thing that I think every shaman should know. Now, the last one, which is my favorite because I'm primarily a healer, is known by two names, and it's the Scepter of Azjar, which is what it originally was. And I will freely admit that I was a very vocal, angry person about this because it's like, Azjar is not a shaman. Why are we getting something like this? She's a mage, mage. So they renamed it, and it's now Sharsdal Scepter of Tides, which makes more sense. The original description, it was altered slightly, and I'm not going to read the description because it has changed, but originally started as it was actually Queen Azjara's scepter, and it was a gift to her when she was still in charge of all of the Night Elves, and she was the Highborn Queen, and it had a pure piece of water, this elemental globule of the Well of Eternity, which now we know is Titan blood. Like, it is this pure arcane water source that allowed her to control not only amazing arcane energies, but water and do that sort of manipulation. And after she turned into a Naga, after everything happened where the War of the Ancients, after everything was swallowed by the sea, and she made her deal with the old gods to turn into Ursula, basically, she started giving the scepter to her most trusted lieutenant so that they could go do her bidding because it acts as a focus. And the quest that you get is, okay, well, one of our shaman went to go find this. We heard stories of it. We went to go find it and she hasn't come back. You need to go find her. And you go back to the Vashir and you do this investigation where you're going from all these different places and you try to find out what happened to her until you find out, yes, she's been taken, and you have to go inside of what is essentially the rehash of the Vashir dungeon from Cataclysm to free her with all new mechanics. But you're a healer, right? You need a party. And so one of the first things you get is you get a elemental shaman companion, which is absolutely phenomenal. And his name escapes me at this time, and I'm really, really sorry. But he was one of the bosses from the original dungeon, which is very poetic that he's coming back here. You get Grosh, who is one of my favorite NPCs ever, because he is a tide giant that you save from Naga that says, I like you, tiny thing. I will help you. And just goes and he shields for you. And you make your way through the dungeon. You free your companion, and she's an enhancement shaman. You have a full party of a warrior, an enhancement shaman, an elemental shaman, and you as the healer. And you get to this big battle where you have to literally destroy and take this Naga lieutenant and take the scepter away from her, and you defeat her, and you go through a healing trial to get it, and it's probably one of the more interesting ones that they've done. It was a great scenario. I absolutely loved it. It was challenging. It made you use all of your abilities and actually pay attention to what talents you had chosen and if it was working for you or not. And the mechanics of the fight were great. And at the end of it, you not only get the scepter, you get to watch Grosh, who has the mind of essentially a puppy, destroy the Fish Queen with a Zangief-style pile driver into the ground. And then you go back, and you go back to the Heart of Azeroth, and no matter what artifact you have, you raise it up, and your power, the power of that artifact channeled by a shaman, cracks open the whole thing. And it's this epic moment where you have everything in your hands, and you have what you're looking at is like, yeah, okay, I can do this. I can absolutely do this. And it is a phenomenal storytelling moment for each of the artifacts that culminate in this wonderful feeling of, yes, I am important, which is something that they struggled for many expansions to do and hit right the nail right on the head right at the beginning.
So I was going to ask you how you felt about it being the Scepter of Ashara, but I guess I didn't realize how much they had kind of gone back and trimmed some of that, so it wasn't necessarily, like you were saying, that specifically, does it still belong, was it still hers and they just renamed it, or are they trying to kind of patch that up? Or?
They patched it up by giving it a different name, which was good. And they sort of expounded upon the origin of it, making sure that it was known that it was very, very closely tied to the element of water, being from the Well of Eternity and everything that went there. And the element of water is the shaman healing element. So it was very important that they did that, because it made a lot more sense than what they were talking about before. And it's like, okay, I could see a Scepter of Ashara being the name of like a mage weapon. Why do I care? And so when they gave it the elven name, the pure elven name, that was perfect.
So we get our artifacts, you know, whatever you pick there. And then from there, I'm pretty sure you open up your order hall. Where does the kind of the shaman campaign go from there?
So you start going to each of the elemental planes looking for assistance. And it starts actually with you going to the zones, getting your stuff and going after the Tidestone. And the first thing you get back is our missing friend, our missing compatriot that hasn't been there forever. And oh man, I am so sorry. I keep forgetting his name. Shoot.
Some of the followers are forgettable, so I'm not.
This is particularly embarrassing for me.
Shame.
So that is Neptalon. That's right, Neptalon.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay.
Now, if anybody doesn't remember him, he was the elemental water lord that at the end of the dungeon, which is for whatever reason we saw him, he kind of went off into the sunset with an octopus.
Mm-hmm.
My canon is that he got married, but you know, whatever. So he comes back.
We don't judge.
So he comes back and he says, okay, you got the Tidestone, you got your artifacts and everything taken care of. I owe you a debt because you took care of the waters, which were raging too hard for me to calm down. Mm-hmm. Now I can do my job. So I'll help you, but good luck getting everybody else to do it. And he basically just challenges you. He's like, yeah, go ahead. Try to get everybody else. Let's see how you do little tiny shaman thing. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I know it was like, oh man, I'm going to do something really epic here. And then from there you go. And I believe fire is the next one. I believe where you go through to the fire plane, you go back to
Firelands,
where everything is in chaos because all the fire elementals are fighting for control.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go and you basically beat the pulp out of a bunch of would-be bosses. They're like, oh, I'm the greatest. And you're like, no, sit down, shut up. You're gonna work for him now. And
so is this because we beat Ragnaros? So yes. Now that whole area over there is just
it's a void. Leadership void.
Yeah, because he's the only elemental that died because we actually killed him on the elemental plane, whereas all the other ones that we fought...
Killing a demon in the Twisted Nether.
Yeah, him and Alakir are the two that we wanted defeating on their home plane. So same thing like demons, when you do there, it's for realsies, like they're gone.
Gotcha, okay.
So
we killed Ragnaros, and now it's all like crazy town.
Yep.
in Firelands, so we gotta get that sorted out.
And we do. By punching, shooting, or telling other people to punch things for us, until we can get all the way down to the end, where we say, okay, you with the giant fire body, no face, giant wings and two swords, you're in charge now. You owe me. And begrudgingly he admits, yes, okay, I owe you. I will pledge my assistance to you now that everybody recognized me as the true elemental lord.
And I can't even remember that guy's name. It was basically the boss before you crossed the bridge.
Balrog, basically.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So he's okay. He's mostly forgettable of the four. But then you embark on going to talk to Stone Mother. And you talk to her and you're like, hey, remember that thing I did for you to clear up your downstairs and basement and all that other area and, you know, took Doomhammer out of here and got rid of, like, the corruption so you could have your peace? Great. No more peace. You're going to come work for me. And after doing a series of quests to, you know, finish up, basically clean up everything, she goes, okay, I'll help you out. I'll send one of my representatives to the Heart of Azeroth. I know exactly where it is. See you there. And she does. She absolutely does. And the coolest thing, though, is when we go for the element of air, because not only we're not just going to go talk to somebody, because again, Alakir is dead.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do something that warriors have wanted to do since vanilla. We go get Thunder Fury. We go get Thunder Fury so we could resurrect Prince Thundarin. And that is an amazing moment where we have to go all the way across the world, not only to the elemental plane of air and do our stuff there, but we have to go back to the Broken Shore and find where the last wielder of Thunder Fury is and take it off of his corpse so that we can go bring it all the way back to Silithus, which is great because when's the last time anybody's been there and had this epic moment that is very much akin to when the sword was forged in classic or vanilla, whatever you want to call it. And this is a great moment for all of us old timers that are like, I remember doing this and this being a lot harder, but this is still cool. And then you instill again, you hand it back to who's supposed to own it, and you say, all right, well, the plane of air is all kind of messed up right now. We took care of fire. You're back from the dead. You go take care of that right now. Okay, thanks. And you have this moment where after you complete this and after you do these wonderful scenarios for each one of them, all four elemental lords and the representatives, it's one of my favorite screenshots I've ever taken. Mm-hmm. They greet you and infuse your artifact, quote unquote, with their power and good faith, saying, yes, we pledge our allegiance to you. And it's this epic moment. It's like, Titans couldn't do this. Titans couldn't get them to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Titans had to imprison them. And me, I'm a little tiny, well, relatively speaking, Tauren compared to them. And they're like, okay, yeah, I'll listen to you. You got it. It's like, it's just such a surreal moment.
I took that same screenshot and I remember thinking like there was no other campaign so far has felt like this epic or like that I was so important. Like, I don't know, like the warrior one we just talked about was basically Odin kind of just being a butthole and like, hey.
I mean, if your beard was on fire, you'd probably be cranky too. You know.
Well, yeah, we learned that it's not even his beard; it's a scar. It's just his face that got wrecked. I guess that's what Arasi was saying.
Yes,
but yeah, so. Like, I mean, I guess I'd be pissed. Yeah, but like this shaman one, man, it's just so like crazy. It's like you bring all the elemental lords together. You unite this again. Like it just feels like you did a crazy thing that no other I don't really get from any other campaign.
The other cool thing to note about that too is my understanding, and because I haven't completed all of the Order Hall campaigns, so I will be listening to the show to make sure I catch up on all of that. There's this moment where you realize that these campaigns touch every single piece of WoW content we've had over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You have things that take you to vanilla BC. You have things that take you to the you know the frozen north the wasteland of the Wrath of the Lich King areas. You have all of these pieces that touch all of these elements of the story in this campaign, and I don't know any other Order Hall that does that. And I think that's really, really cool because it's a great way to have a sort of a retrospective of where we've come over, you know, 14.
Do you feel like Legion is hitting a lot of the right nostalgic notes for people or for you?
I think it is. I think it's it, I don't want to say it was, feels like an apology for Warlords, but it almost does, because Warlords tried. They really tried, and they tried to walk this line, and they couldn't. It's really hard to find that balance. And we were talking about this earlier. It's really hard to find a balance between things. It's, you overcompensate one way or another, and either story suffers or mechanics suffer, or, you know, content creation suffers.
Legion, even, but like, even some of my favorite television shows, they have that season where you're like, that is the worst season I've ever seen, but it paved the way for one of the better seasons. Do you, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's what happened.
And that's what I think happened, because they took everything they learned from that, and this is everything we failed at, here's everything we can do better, and Legion walks that line perfectly. You have the elements of discovery of new zones that you have never encountered before, which are perfect, because you need that sense of exploration and wonder. You have this deep connection to the lore of the world and story that has been evolving for almost two decades at this point between multiple games, and books and everything else. And you have throwbacks to stuff that happened before the games and during the Warcraft RTSs. So anybody who's been around has that sort of sense of rich involvement. You have connections to races' origins, which are always sort of important and everybody asks for, because if I'm playing a Tauren, I like to know where I came from, and there's a huge content story for that here. There's almost for every race, and it's like when gnomes figured out where they came from in Alduar. Like, it's that moment of satisfaction, of knowing your roots. And I think they did a amazing job so far. And this is probably the happiest I've been with an expansion since the Burning Crusade.
I have found points basically from every expansion that were just very high notes for me. Like, a lot of people talk about Kata and how bad it was, but like, I look back on Kata very fondly. And then going from Kata into Mist, like, man, I love Mist. And then Mist into, you know, Warlords. Well, you know, Warlords had some really cool. Okay, whatever. It's like the, you know. It's fine. I guess it's the broth that needs to be there so you can make this really good stew. I guess, I don't know, bad example, whatever, but like, I don't know, but the culmination of everything of where it's kind of landing, you know, take mechanics out of it, take all the, you know, oh no, we had to wait this long between patches or raids, or I didn't like this boss, or I didn't like this raid, or I don't like grinding AP, whatever it is, like the story and the content and the campaigns and the class specific stuff going on in Legion is just phenomenal. Like, some of them are better than others, but it's just so cool. And I would definitely tell people, like, even if you only play one class, you're kind of missing out. Like, some of these, like the Death Knight one and the Shaman one, are just like so good. If you can do it, because there's so much good content there.
Oh, and that's one thing that I'm learning for myself. Like, I'm starting to play other classes, and, you know, that's one thing where I would like to have people tell me where I should spend my time, where they think is the best later on. But I'm starting to learn there's so much rich content there to explore. Like, this is one of the few times where I don't feel that there's a whole lot of downtime, even when if there is, or if you consider that there is.
Yeah.
There's so much to do, even like with the class mount stuff that they added in 7.2. Like, it's phenomenal.
So where does, okay, so we unite everybody. Make sure to have your print screen button ready, because it is one of the coolest moments. You're going to want a shot of that. Where do we go from there?
So after that, you start to go into weird bits of story. And the first thing is, when the story picks back up, after you've completed everything, you've become the Fireseer, you've got the Earthen Ring back to fighting order, you've got the elementals doing their thing, or chilling out in the maelstrom, making sure that everything's copacetic, you get this thing where it's like, hey, you know what would really help us right now? Remember this thing called the Doomstone? Yeah, it was a really important thing that sort of, you know, out of game, we had a couple quests about that sort of could have brought about the destruction of the entirety of Azeroth, and then we sort of just threw it away, and Magatha has it, and we should probably go see what's up with her. And
you pronounced it right. I was going to ask you
about that. I'm irritated about the pronunciation, but I'll go with
it. Well, I mean, that's why, I think, wasn't that what she refers to herself? Yes. So I'm like, well, I can't argue at that point.
Yeah, I've been calling her Magatha.
Magatha?
It's Magatha. Yep.
Yes.
She's drunk, man.
But it's this cool moment where it's like, okay, you're going to go, and they're like, go get this from her. I don't care what you have to do to get it. Go get it. And you're getting ready to fight, and you're like, okay, we're going to go rough her up, and it's going to, okay, the Legion's here, and they are murdering her people. We should probably stop that. And despite her saying otherwise, you save the Grim Totems from annihilation at the hands of the Legion. And I've learned something very important, not just how to pronounce her name, but apparently super high-level shaman get mage portals, and I want to know when I get those, because she totally has one of those.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering that.
But you save her, and you save the Doomstone. You get it back from a demon that stole it, because they were going to use it to blow up Azeroth, because that's what they want to do, and you won't give it back to her. Basically, you say, no, come take it from me if you want it. And she's like, no. Okay, I'm not going to fight. I'll bide my time. And this is where it gets a little weird for me as a Horde player. Now, Alliance doesn't have much of a problem with this, and I've talked to a bunch of people about this. Alliance don't get it, at least not necessarily, because she's just a shaman to them. Yeah, she's kind of a mean person sometimes, and you've interacted with her and gave her armaments and struck a deal and a non-aggression pact here and there. On the Horde side, she killed one of our most important members. As a Tauren, she killed the coolest dude ever with her treachery. And it's like, why would I let her back into my club when she is a complete affront to shaman, a complete affront to everything about balance. And personally, as a Tauren, she killed Bloodhoof. Why am I going to let her in? But then I went back and I looked at it, and just like the elemental lords, she's important. She is arguably a more powerful shaman than Thrall. She has been forever. She has been at these super important moments throughout the Horde and the Alliance side. She is story rich. And she's one of those things where, love her or hate her, whatever her motivations are, the elements never abandon her like they did Thrall. So she's doing something right.
Right. So that was going to be my question then. Like, how is she still where she's at if she's done all this terrible stuff? And the elements seem to abandon Thrall when he was trying to make good choices.
And that's something we don't have an answer for yet. And I think that's something that we're going to get towards the end of the expansion when everything reaches that culmination.
Because clearly could have taken the Doomstone when you're like fighting.
Oh, she could have murdered you.
She's just like, no.
She flat out tells you, you're young, you don't know what you're doing. Not yet. And they call you Farseer. Like, she could have housed you.
So she just intentionally goes, okay, fine. All right, let's go. Where are we going? Let's go to your house.
Now, my concern with that is like, okay, we're letting her into this area where all of the elemental lords are, where portals are constantly open to all of the elemental planes, where they are nowhere else on Azeroth, by the way, with our most powerful, our brightest, and we're letting her there. This does not go well for us in the end, does it? But she's chilling there. She's got her Grim Totem warriors, and they're guarding the Doomstone, and they're not doing anything yet, but I'm wondering if it's part of a bigger plot, a bigger plan, and I'm wondering if maybe she's tapped into a little bit of Azeroth herself, if the elements have actually spoken to her through it, since they're part of that. Maybe she knows something we don't know yet.
So as a Horde player, you are totally fine with her being your name.
Oh no, I want to murder her daily.
Okay. I'm like
she's right at that edge, man. I just want to kick her right off. Like, I want to like 300 her right into that pit.
I can't. I hate her as a follower, though. Nice. She's just so nasty. Like, every time she talks, you're just like, ugh.
Yep. No, it's they do a really good job of capturing her attitude, and I want to give them credit for that. They wrote her very well with her lines and how she interacts with everything. Because I don't know a person that actually likes her. And that's perfect. Because, like, even Thrall, when he has these big boo-boos, it's like, oh, he's still Thrall. Illidan almost destroys everything, and everybody still loves him. And
right.
Magatha's like, no, I'm just here. You're going to deal with it. And you're like, I really don't like you. And
yeah, she's perfect. Like, what is it? What's his name? Joffrey from Game of Thrones?
Yes.
She's like,
she's totally Joffrey.
You're like,
nice.
Oh, screw this.
Headcanon accepted.
Okay, so... So she, through that process, then comes back to the Maelstrom with you, and she agrees to be your follower? Like, I don't...
It's not so much that she's agreeing to be your follower. She's sort of like saying, our interests align for now. And she's sort of like, I'll take your recommendations. I'm not taking them as orders. I'll take them as recommendations. Even though, like, functionally and mechanically she's a follower, mm-hmm. it's that air of rebellion is still there. That air of strength is still there, which is nice.
I just don't trust her.
You shouldn't. Me neither. Nobody should. I really hope she blows up at some point. I mean, that's just me personally.
No, you have a good point there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then we get Magatha, which I still, it hurts me to say that. But
yeah, that just sounds wrong.
All right, so we get her. Now, does that lead directly into the, and I've done all this, I just don't remember the specifics of it, but does that lead directly into the class mount, or is there more to the campaign then?
There's more to the campaign for the class mount, which I think is actually really cool too, because what winds up happening is one of the representatives from the elemental plane of air, from the Prince of Thundera, and from that lord says, "We got problems. My boss wants to talk with you. You need to come with me." So you go and you find out that, hey, remember, things aren't really so copacetic in the Land of Air right now because they want to rebel. They don't recognize the current lord as the lord. They were just kind of chillaxing in between, waiting for everything to get calmed down before they can go, "We're out. We're going to do our own thing. Alakir is still the boss. We like him best, even though he's dead and never coming back. And you got the big shiny sword. We don't trust you." So you get it sort of pulled into the elemental plane of air, and you get pulled into the raid. And it's the actual raid.
Yeah.
And it's this cool moment where you sit there and they say, "You got to go deal with this." And you look around and you're like, that's the first encounter from the raid.
Uh-huh. The three dudes on the pedestal.
The three Dijins. And you go and you actually have to beat them up and beat them into submission. And they have their same mechanics from the raid, which is awesome. It's this cool moment where it's like, anybody who didn't get to experience the raid, like, it's not full killjoy, like, you don't have to kill them all at once or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But you get this cool insight into what was a really interesting encounter, and you beat them up, you go through their fights, and at the end, you have this moment where they're like, okay, we give, we get it, you're just going to keep beating us if we don't do this. We pledge our allegiance to he who wields Thunder Fury. And you get flown up into the middle of the zone, just like at the end of the raid the first time. And you get this moment where you're just hovering in air. And he goes, "You know what? Thanks. You did me a solid. I appreciate that. This is twice he helped me out. I got a present for you. Hold on a second." And this elemental materializes. And it's a Tempest elemental. And it's like, yes, you're going to ride this.
So cool.
It's pledged to your service. It is so cool. And, like, all of the mounts, it changes color based on your spec. It's fire for elemental. Yes. It's lightning for enhancement. And it's this watery effect for resto. And it's one of the coolest things ever, because not only is it this awesome big mount that's an elemental, it's a disc. And that has some of the coolest riding animations in the game are discs, because your characters stand on them in different mm-hmm. ways. And so if you get on there and you have your weapons out, it's just cool. Like, you're surfing on an elemental with your weapons ready to go. It's so BA. I love it.
I absolutely love that one. It is. Some of the other ones are cool, but this one is like, I don't know. I think that may have been one of the ones at BlizzCon when they announced him.
Yeah, it was. It was oh my God.
Just like, oh, I know what I'm leveling. Like, yes.
So with the, my conflict here between Shaman and Warlocks, Shaman have this hands down, because the Warlocks is just another dread steed with horns. It's like, I already have one of those. Why do I want another one? But the Shaman one is so awesome. So awesome.
Yeah, the Shaman one I think is really cool. I actually really like the Priest one too. I think it's cool. I like the whole Owl Griffin thing. Like, some of the classes are pretty good. I agree with you. Warlocks, they could have gotten something a little better. So,
I know. It's just like, really? Really?
Well, there's a few where it was like Warlocks and Paladins. Like, Paladins are like...
Oh, no. Yeah, instead of a Dread horse. Steed, they call it a Wrath Steed now, because it's different.
Thanks. Well, it's wrathful.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. So most of the classes get something in addition to that with the mount, like a little toy or something. Like Demon Hunters get a little Demon Hunter Pepe. that they can wear on their head. Death Knights get a little, it's like a little, it's a battle pet,
but it's like you get a different one for each spec. So you get the a frost one, a blood one. Do you know if shaman get any sort of other cool toy or perk that goes along with after they're done?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I know you do get a little something. It's an additional little tchotchke.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as cool as the other ones, because arguably shaman got some really cool toys without needing to go through all that from their vendor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, oh, I miss having water orbs float around me. Here's a toy.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that you could just buy as a shaman.
Yeah.
From your dude there. But I know some of the classes didn't get anything. And if I remember correctly, like priests just didn't get anything. But like a couple of the classes, you can get other color variants of the mount and stuff like that. So I couldn't remember what shaman got.
Like I said, I don't think it was anything important, if anything. And you know what? I'm okay with that, because the Order Hall campaign has been so epic up to this point. I don't need anything extra, at least personally. Like, toys are cool and all, but I've had a better experience than almost any class in the game.
I would take an epic story over any sort of like.
Mm-hmm.
Battle pet or cosmetic thing.
And I think it's a pet. I think it's a Adpole Cloud Seeker or something like that.
I want to say it may be like a little version of the class mount, like a pet or something. I don't know. I could be just making that up because it sounds cool.
That would be awesome.
I think it's the thing that makes frogs rain. I don't know. It's been a while.
Oh, see? Yeah, shaman get the raining frogs. You get other versions of Hex. You get all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so I don't know if there's let's keep going on the campaign thing. Is there anything else to the Shaman campaign up to that, or is that kind of where it drops at?
That's where it sort of ends, going into waiting for 7.3. What happens after that, I don't know what the breadcrumbs are, because this is one of those things where, as much as I love playing on the PTR and stuff like that, I'm purposely holding back from.
Because we're not going to get any spoilers from you then.
Well, there's one thing I will spoil that's not necessarily shaman campaign specific, but it's shaman racial specific.
Let's wait a minute on that then. Let's see if we can cover some of this other stuff. there may or may not be people that care about spoilers, and good for them, but I love spoilers. So before we get into that then, is there anything shaman specific to the Illidan threat? Because I believe a couple of the classes... when they're, you know, as they're, especially Demon Hunters, but as they're going along, they, you know, there are some ties back to the Illidan story.
That's one of the things that I was a little, I don't want to say I think could have been better, but it didn't really tie in shaman-wise. It tied in just basically from Azeroth-wise, but otherwise it was fairly generic, like, you should go save him because of X, Y, Z. You should do this because
of
X, Y, Z.
Yeah, and everybody got the... I always want to call it Light's Hope, but it's not Light's Hope. It's
Zera.
Yeah, that whole story where you go to Exodar. Everybody got that. And let me tell you what, after the first three times of doing that, I was ready to not do that anymore.
I don't blame you.
So everybody got that. That didn't feel like anything epic, but I didn't know if maybe there was some sort of... even Khadgar, was there any sort of like, big Velen or Khadgar or any big player stuff, or was it all just very shaman specific?
All just very shaman specific stuff was contained within the Order Hall campaign. All the bigger breadcrumbs are more generic, and I think that's okay, honestly, because Demon Hunters and Mages and Warlocks have, and those other classes have sort of more of an investment in those sort of NPCs and players, whereas shaman are just like, okay, you're a priest, that's cool, we'll work with you. You're a mage, sweet, I like you very much, Dadgar, but your jokes are terrible, and we're going to be over here doing our thing. And you're a demon hunter, you're a really big demon hunter with horns, sweet, you just made a planet appear, awesome. Okay, like, but none of it is very shaman-y. Like, none of it really speaks to it, aside from the idea of, we need to stop the Legion, and we're going to turn all of our powers of Azeroth like against it. And because we have the Elemental Lords, it's like they're saying, "Here's where you're going to point your gun," and you're going, "Okay, I'm going to point it there."
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like we're kind of circling back to that same thing, that the shaman specific story was just so rich and so well done that like there wasn't room or need to tie in too much other stuff.
Yeah, and to me, that's the mark of a good story, at least. Because everything is self-contained there, and all the bigger pieces to the other rest of the world don't necessarily need to have that tie-in, because that tie-in, that little breadcrumb, is already contained inside of the Order Hall campaign. It's already contained in the class specific stuff. And I think that's really well. I think that's great. I think that's well done.
Well, I think this has been like, this whole episode answers this question, but what really stands out to you as what's awesome about the Shaman story?
I mean, I'm going to go back to you reuniting the Elemental Lords. I mean, just the sheer audacity of them letting players be essentially more powerful than a Titan. You know, they seed planets, they restart worlds, they create life from scratch, and you did something that they could not accomplish. It's just, it was such a powerful moment that I remember, like happy profanity came out of my mouth without me even realizing it when we have those moments. So, like, that was probably the best thing about it. The other thing, like I said, is that it touches everything. It touches every aspect of Azeroth history. And as a lore nerd, as somebody who I literally make a living on the story of this game, it was just such an epic moment.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, the flip side of that, what could they have done better, in your opinion, about the Shaman story?
So the one thing that I think they sort of missed the mark on is the artifact trials. And I understand why it happened, but when you go into the healer one, every healer gets the same scenario. When you go into the DPS one, it's mostly the same scenario. They're all clustered. There's like 4 or 5 different scenarios that you go through. And
this is when you're like later on when you're unlocking the new traits.
After you've done that, like the unlock for the traits is great, but it's the stuff where you go for the hidden appearance, the actual bonus trials.
Oh, the Mage Tower stuff.
Yes. It's a great idea. It's a great concept. But the problem I have with it is I really just wish each one would have been a little more class specific, because one of the things that I think is great is I love class style quests. I love the Order Hall campaign. Let the breadcrumbs from it lead into something where it's like, okay, I'm instead of for DPS one, let me be defending the Heart of Azeroth and have it be the same scenario for all 3 specs, but have me doing different aspects of it. You know, have a healer scenario, have a DPS scenario for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do that for all the classes and still, you know, make it this sort of awesome epic thing, but you do it as a challenge. And that little extra flavor, I think, would have pushed it over the edge. They're not bad. They're good and they're great challenges. It could have been done better, though.
So you're not saying that they need to design 36 different scenarios. You can do, you know, what is it, 12 scenarios, one for each class, and then just tailor them to a spec rather than just having all DPS do DPS stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like they've proven that they can do that already with our artifacts. Mm-hmm. When every class had a different role or different experience getting their artifacts, you can do that. And I come back to the Shaman Resto artifact quest. You have these NPCs that pick up the party roles. You could very easily interchange them and swap them out as what the player is. Like it's And I think they could have done that. And I would say, like, 36 or 37 would have been untenable. 10 or 12, maybe not. You could, I mean, priests and paladins could share stuff, and mages and warlocks, maybe force them to work together or something like that. Like, have those moments, and or, you know, druids and shaman even have something like that, but make it a little more flavorful than what it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any of your hidden appearances yet?
I have almost all of them, I think, unlocked. I got a bunch. I've spent a lot of time doing it.
Oh, nice.
I kind of hesitated for a long time, and I watched a bunch of guides and was just like, I don't know. So last week I went in and tried it a couple of times before raid, because the Mage Tower was up, and it was like, I'm doing it. I'm like, this is totally doable. Like, this is not a question of whether or not I can put out enough damage, because I play a DPS Demon Hunter. And it had nothing to do with the actual damage that I was putting out, but it was just like, we're just going to make this super annoying for you. I was like, oh, I could totally do this, but it's like, well, if the stars don't line up, and if you accidentally push this button or misstep at the wrong time, you're starting all over again. So, I haven't actually gone in and done them yet.
Well, I mean, it's definitely highly recommended, especially if you want a challenge, something that is going to keep you on your toes. Totally worthwhile doing, but I think you hit the nail on the head. It's just that level of difficulty is there. It's not just a walk in and get it type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's way more about the mechanics. For what I was doing, I can't speak for everyone, but for what it's way more about actually doing the dance and following the mechanics and getting the things right than it is about, like, can you do 4 million DPS consistently on demand? You know, like, it's very much like be in the right place at the right time or else, you know. Well, Daryl, did you have anything else before we get to our little spoilers?
No, I don't think so. I'm ready for spoilers.
Did you maybe want to apologize for abandoning the Shaman class?
And... No, because Chaos Bolts are still pretty awesome.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the Warlock story one's going to be as fun, but
probably not.
Joe, maybe you want to. You said you had a little bit of spoilery goodness for us.
Yeah, it's super small, but it's something that I think is important if somebody hasn't looked to what's coming in 7.3. So one of the important shaman things from the Alliance side is Nabundu, and he brought shamanism essentially to the Alliance in the Burning Crusade, and he is a broken. He is one of the Draenei who has been withered and lost his connection to the light, but found his connection to nature, to the elements. He is arguably one of the most important NPCs that shaman have. Well, the broken aren't just on Draenor. They're on Argus. We are actually going to be fighting with them with pockets of resistance of broken in this area, which is this. It's this huge lore moment because it's like, wait a minute. So this could literally happen everywhere. And what we thought was like a small race of them. No, this is everybody that didn't become an Eridar basically. Mm-hmm. And it's this huge moment of reveal. It's like,
that's cool.
And it ties the Alliance to Argus. In this way that's not just Draenei, it's, yes, this is your broken past. This is your history here. Also, there's tale books on Argus. So, I mean, that's a thing, too. Like, they're not just apparently a Draenor thing. They exist on other planets as well.
Yeah, that's weird. But well, I could pull out your tablet mount. And...
Yeah, there you go.
Wow, that's super interesting about the broken. Yeah,
yeah, that is cool.
I don't know, man. I'm ready for 7.3. We're still on the last boss of Tomb of Sargeras. We haven't finished that yet, but I feel like I'm ready in terms of story and progression. And I know it's still. I think some of it has to do with the fact that the way that they're pacing the patches with the raids. You know, we did the Broken Shore patch, and we've been down there doing dailies down there for a while, and then finally the tomb raid opened up, and I'm like. By the time the raid opens up, you almost feel like if you're not a raider or if that's not you're the bulk of your content, you're ready for new stuff. And I don't know if that's by design or if that's, you know, the way that they're pacing it, like they're happy with that. But I feel like I'm ready for, you know, some new stuff, the Argus stuff.
I think everybody is. I know I'm foaming at the mouth for it. And I think you hit the nail on the head, though. This is something that I see at the end of a lot of expansions. But then I look at 7.3 and the sheer volume of content, like this isn't just a raid patch we're getting. We are getting whole new zones, deep story. This is slightly spoilerish for other people, so you've been warned if you're listening. Multiple planets, not just Argus. Like there's...
Oh, really?
They've data mined at least 12 different biomes. Like it... And from what I understand with some of the stuff with some of the raid encounters, not all of the raid encounters happen on Argus.
Oh, I love it. Oh, it's so good.
That's cool.
So it's this massive sprawling content that like we're getting in a patch. And it's like, this is stuff that you would pay like other games as an expansion worth of content. Mm-hmm. And we're getting it for free as 7.3. So if it takes a little time, I'm okay with the drought because the just buckets of stuff we're getting is insane.
Well, I'm glad because I think there was some heat and some criticism for the whole 7.2 is the biggest patch ever. OMG, everybody.
And then we couldn't play it.
And then we go and 7.2 is basically this tiny little island where like you got your class mount in about 15 minutes and that was it. And as players, I think most of us felt like that was the biggest patch ever, really. Like, and, you know, and I know there was more to it. I know there was balance. There was the, you know, Tomb of Sargeras and a bunch of, you know, stuff that was kind of trickled out. But it was,
yeah.
I think when you say this is the biggest patch ever, I want to see the biggest effing patch ever. You know, I want to see, like, okay, this is going to take me a while to get through. And this is going to, you know, the dailies that are progressive and they take more time and, you know, you earn your way through this stuff. Like, that's what I'm hoping for.
And that's the thing. We're not just getting dailies either. Like, the quests that are happening in these zones are story quests, just like the leveling we did in the zones in the Broken Shore. Like, it's not just, oh, go beat 10 badgers that have been fell tainted today that are mm-hmm. being written by, you know, murlocs. It's actual progression of story in an epic manner through questing. And that's big, because I think that's actually the first time that they've done that in an expansion, like, not in a patch towards the end of an expansion ever. It's not just dailies. It's not just rep grinding. Mm-hmm. It's not just a raid or a dungeon. It's a whole new series of story and quests. Like, they're actually investing in finishing mm-hmm. the story.
Although
I loved what they did with, what was it, 5.2, the Thunder Island, you know, yes. I progressively unlocked that. I think that was like, if it's a little more of a play on that, and something that's like, you don't just get this whole thing at once. You have to kind of work for it. Like, that's, I think that's what kind of keeps mm-hmm. people fresh and into it, knowing that I come back next week and now there's a whole nother thing. And the alternation between the scenarios and, like, the, you know, the unlocking new areas and stuff like that, you know.
I'm going to be disappointed now if I don't see murlocs riding fell-tainted badgers, though.
Okay, you know what? I don't have a whole lot of pull at Blizzard, but I will tweet at Celestine.
Now that you said that, I'm like, has a I want to see that
incessantly. I will draw this picture myself in MS Paint and tweet it.
Spoiler alert.
I know. It's like, man, I'd like to see that.
Hey, a murloc riding any sort of little thing.
Well, is there any last thing about the Shaman story you want to leave with us before we start wrapping it up?
Only to implore anybody who hasn't played through it to take some time and do it. Like, you will not be sorry. And just keep in mind, like, I hit the highlights. I did not hit the breadth of the content, because mm-hmm. we don't have 8 hours for me to sit here and just wax poetic about it. So if you're even tangentially related in Shaman, play a Shaman, play through the quest. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I second that, and I am not amazed as a Shaman. I think Shaman and DK are probably were the two highlights for me of campaign and story stuff this expansion.
Nice. I think that's the point. Me and Rossi have argued back and forth on which takes number one on that one a little bit. So
nice.
Well, I don't have you done any of the DK stuff yet?
Just started. I literally just got my Death Knight to artifact level.
Well, there you go. Do that, and maybe I'll check back in with you and see if you still feel that the Shaman one reigns supreme.
Spoilers, I will.
Awesome. At least somebody's loyal to Sean.
Listen, I'm going to be a totem thumper till the day I die. It's how this works, man.
Right. All right. If you haven't already, make sure you come and join the official Training Dummies Discord server at discord.me/TTD. It's the best way to keep in touch and get real-time interaction with us and our community, as well as the awesome guests you have heard on the show. That's discord.me/TTD.
It seems fate has brought us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
Rob, what do you have for shoutouts?
Definitely Joe for coming and hanging out with us and thumping totems, I guess, is the is the word, huh? And the raid team, we've done some restructuring. We've talked about it a couple of times, how we've built a couple things from the ground up, and I feel like we're hitting a stride, and, you know, we're hitting some walls and having some challenges, but it feels good to make some progress. So definitely the folks over on the raid team and Joe tonight. Daryl, what do you got?
Yeah, definitely the raid team. I know I missed a couple weeks here, but I was there last week, and there's no greater feeling than when you're on a new boss and you declare this is the last pull of the night and you kill that boss on that pull. And we did that. That's that's the best way to end a raid night. And we did that. So big shout out to everyone there. And we are running a contest here. We were announcing it on Twitter. Yeah, for Wowhead and Ask Mr. Robot Premium. So both of them. And while we were recording, our little contest bot has picked a winner, and Nico is the winner. So a shout out to you. I will get in touch with you and get you the codes to get you both of those. So congratulations. Joe, do you have any shout outs this evening?
I would like to take a shout out to the entire community. It may sound a little bit cheesy, but I wouldn't have the love and passion for the content and IP and lore and everything I do if it wasn't for all of my listeners, all of my friends and people I interact with on a daily basis. I want to give a shout out to both you, Daryl, and Rob for not only just inviting me onto the show, but for doing something that is cool and fun and having fun while doing it. I may be a latecomer to the Training Dummies podcast, but I've really enjoyed, and I can tell you guys love what you do. And having that passion, that's what this community is all about. So I want to give you guys props for that. I'd also like to give a massive shout out to my podcast co-hosts on Lore Watch and For the Lore, because again, without them, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, dude. Thank you. That means a lot.
Probably one of the most heartfelt, amazing, I think things that anyone's ever said on this show.
Well, it is 100% from the heart, because this is a passion. Mm-hmm. And listeners, I'm sure you guys know this, but all the work that goes into producing a podcast and producing content, there's a lot of it, and you have to love what you do, and you have to love your community. So anybody who does it, I'm all about shouting that from the highest rooftops and praise, and you guys definitely earn it.
Awesome. I think I might be tearing up.
Do I need to say something mean to balance it out?
No, that's good. That's
now,
good.
But now I think Daryl definitely owes Shaman an apology.
All right. Before we wrap this up, Joe, where can people reach you if they have more questions about shamans or anything else?
Well, you can obviously find me on blizzardwatch.com or forthelore.com. I'm usually available on both those websites. I'm always popping around different Discords. You can find me on the Training Dummies Discord, because I'm not leaving now that you got me here.
Nice.
I'm setting up camp. You can find me on Twitter at LoaderZJ. And if you want to hear me prattle on about things that aren't necessarily Warcraft related, but story-driven video games, be sure to check out For the Lore. We've been going on for a very long time talking about all sorts of cool video games that also include Blizzard, but also not Blizzard. So you can reach me there as well.
Well, that is it for episode 172 of the Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show over on iTunes, Stitcher, and thetrainingdummies.com. And remember, we are all just jackasses with mics. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust.
Woo!
From people you shouldn't.
Woo!